Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As the U.S. government stews in its shutdown and Congress grapples with President Trump over the construction of a border wall, it's easy to forget about the human lives who live, love, and suffer on either side of the border between America and Mexico. Sometimes the best way to tell those stories is through fiction. Author Jerry Wilson has a new novel. It's called From Eden to Orizaba. It follows the intersecting lives of two men on either side of the border, but often on the same side of the law. A Mexican father-to-be named Pablo sneaks north to provide for his family. A Texan named Lantry staggers south seeking redemption. Neither ends up where they have expected. Jerry Wilson is a former professor and magazine editor. This is his sixth book, and he has some upcoming readings and book signings we'll talk about in a moment. But first, he joins us from the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Jerry, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Lori. It's good to be here.
So we met at the South Dakota Festival of Books, and you were carrying this book in your hand, and I actually tried to take it from you. it was your reading copy. So I was pretty excited to finally get to read it. Talk a little bit about how your own personal travels, it's so evident as you read this that you have walked at least some of these streets. Tell us about how your own personal travels have informed writing about this particular part of the world.
Sure. I've been traveling in Mexico for half a century now. Almost once a year, I've been in every state of Mexico, and really love the country. It's kind of my second country. So it's really someplace that I have a great strong feeling and love for, and the Mexican people are among the sweetest anywhere on earth. So it really does pain me when people, especially people in positions of power, refer to them as criminals and invaders. The folks who are trying to cross the border are people like us, except without opportunity. And so I really feel for them, and really wanted to tell a story that kind of explains through fiction what's behind this push for immigration.
Why fiction? Because you've written essays, you've written nonfiction books, you've written travel writing. What is it that you find is particularly powerful? Because really, at its heart, this is a love story in many ways, and yet it's against the backdrop of all these different things, from hog confinement operations moving from America south to federal prisons being run by private or private prisons, I should say. There's a lot happening in there, but really it's about the people. So talk a little bit about fiction being, the vehicle to tell these stories. Why choose that?
Well, I could have written this story as nonfiction, but I think that people involve themselves with fictional characters if the characters are believable. And none of the characters in my book are perfect people. They have their flaws, and some make some bad decisions, and so on. But they're real people, I think, and so are the places in the book. The two title places, Eden to Orizaba, are both real. Eden is a small town in West Texas, which was the home to one of many private contract prisons where the federal government put illegal immigrants that were captured. And Orizaba is one of the most beautiful spots on earth. It's the highest peak in Mexico, 18,600 feet, a perpetually snow-capped mountain southeast of Mexico City. And below the peak is a long valley that is full of incredibly interesting, beautiful small towns where very small agriculture had been the mainstay for a century. So when I discovered that Smithfield Foods, the world's largest hog producer, had moved in without much notice to the people and established dozens, scores of CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, with a million pigs in this pristine valley. That caught my attention, and I decided I needed to go there and see it for myself. And so the places in the book and the history in the book are very real, but the characters I think are representative of many other people whose lives are torn apart by economic forces that they have no control over. And it seemed to me that fiction was the best way to tell this story, particularly in 2009 when the swine flu epidemic that swept much of the world began right here in these valleys with a million hogs and very lax environmental and worker protections. That made me think, this is a story I have to tell, and fiction is a way to tell it.
The first time that we see Pablo, we see him through Lantry's eyes. So Lantry is the American, Pablo is the Mexican, and Lantry pretty much happens upon, there's a checkpoint, and he's watching him, a stranger, get arrested. Tell me about sort of the creative structural decision to sort of the first time we see this character. He is just a random guy getting arrested, and then we get to know him at a much deeper level.
Yes, Lantry's initial response is probably not atypical of those who don't know Mexico, don't know Mexicans, and have never thought deeply about the immigration issues. He's dismissive. He thinks, well, it's probably best that these guys were arrested anyway because they were obviously doing something illegal. And the way I structured the story was to alternate chapters between the two main point of view characters. So all the way to the center of the book, the perspective shifts back and forth from Pablo as he makes his way through the court system and ends up in solitary confinement in the prison in Eden, and Lantry, who is struggling with alcoholism, stumbling toward Mexico City, and eventually escaping to Orizaba. And of course, along the way, we meet other characters, including the woman that is central to the story, because both men are in love with her, this inevitably leads to potential conflict or confrontation. But I think that both of the characters are dynamic characters, but particularly Lantry, the American, not only has to deal with his alcoholism, but he has to deal with, and his wrecked life, but he has to deal with his own attitudes, which are not well-informed, and he learns through experience with the other characters.
And it, I think it's insightful that he is in the midst of this crisis of his own that is really kind of keeping his eyes from being opened any further, because Lantry's got a lot going on in his life as it's sort of unraveling and falling apart, and he's, in some ways, seeking higher ground, literally and figuratively. Yes. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned, let's go back to this notion of Smithfield and CAFOs and swine flu, and when this operation moves into the city, the notion of a million hogs to people who have 10 is almost impossible to even imagine. Many people would say, hey, this is a huge economic opportunity because look at all the workers that they're going to need. Talk to us a little bit about how this played out, not only in the book, but historically.
Well, after NAFTA, which from the beginning was in some ways maybe a good idea, international trade, but also very flawed because it lacked the worker and environmental protections that we expect, though we don't always find, in the United States. But after NAFTA, which came into effect in 1994, very quickly, sort of sweatshops, maquiladoras, sprang up along the Mexican side of the Rio Grande. And then in several locations in Mexico, international corporations involved in the meat industry began setting up these concentrated animal feeding operations. And the people who were affected by it really had no say in this and didn't even know what was coming. So it was sprung upon them as a big surprise, and the initial reaction, I think, was somewhat positive because there were jobs to be had, particularly during the building phase. But once the barns were all built, the hundreds and hundreds of barns, and they were filled, then the jobs were fewer and not so desirable and paid less, and the historically speaking and in the novel, workers became expendable and were pitted against each other. And the other aspect of the economic impact was that it kind of destroyed the traditional very small farm economy that had existed there ever since the 1910 revolution, where land was redistributed to the peasants. So what I tried to do is convey some of this history through the fictional story.
There's a part where Lantry is sort of reflecting on how he sold his truck. He's unemployed. He's a newspaper man, but he's currently unemployed and has left his life behind. And he keeps going back to this moment where he really got less than the truck was worth because he was in a hurry, or what was it? And he talks a little bit about this acceptance of, and I'm quoting from the book, diminished self-worth that devalued everything he touched. And that really resonated with me. Talk a little bit about the place where he is mentally, and then maybe even compare it to, you know, how it intersects with Pablo's life, where the value of something just goes down, and then that expectation spreads to other parts of a community, to other parts of your personal life.
Yes, when the reader meets Lantry, he is really at rock bottom. He's lost everything. He goes to Mexico because he can't think of anything else to do, and he has enough money to survive for quite a while, even though he's dumped this truck to the first offer. He figures he can live on that for a while, but he's not in a place to even think about the future. He's just basically figuring where he'll get his next drink and maybe enough food to survive for a while. So there's only one way for him to go, and that's up. And it takes a long time for him to recognize and to come to terms with his life as it is and to begin to do something about it. And it takes a traumatic experience to shake him and bring about that the beginning of a turnaround. With Pablo, he's just gotten married to his sweetheart. He had worked in Sioux Falls at Smithfield Foods operation there, the hog processing plant that we know as Morell's, and has gone home to marry Maria. But then he has to go back to work again, and the second time he is arrested crossing the border. So Pablo, in his deepest moments in solitary confinement in the prison in Eden, actually even considers taking his own life. But he too has this moment, this epiphany that he instead will fight harder for survival and to take care of those he loves back home in Mexico. So the two men both go through a similar cycle of really reaching the depths and then rising above and looking out for other people.
Yeah, and it becomes in some ways a metaphor for how connected we are to lives that, because these two, I'm not going to give anything away about the end of the book, but certainly they aren't going to meet and become friends throughout most of the book. They don't really know each other or know of each other even, but they are deeply, deeply connected.
Yes. Maria doesn't know what's happened to Pablo. He hasn't been able to communicate with her. They have no telephone service in this little town and so on. He doesn't even know where she is, so he can't let her know what's happened to him. She assumes that he's probably dead, or at least he's not coming back. And of course, what we know about the immigration situation is that scores and scores of people do die every year trying to make it across the border and across the desert and so on. It's you don't make such a decision lightly. It's made out of desperation. And so Pablo and Lantry don't know about each other. When Lantry finds out that Pablo is still alive, this, of course, increases his real moral dilemma, what he's going to do now.
You are reading from both of your books that were released in 2018, Seasons of the Coyote and Eden to Orizaba, and you'll be in Sioux City this Saturday, January 12th. That's at 8 p.m. At the Vanguard Art Center in Sioux City. Tell me who you're with there that night.
Well, T. Wilson King, a Vermilion musician, a really classic musician here in Vermilion, will be playing, and at the beginning, at 8, I'll be reading, and then he'll play, and then I'll read some more, and then he'll play some more. So I'm really looking forward to that evening. The Vanguard Art Center on Pierce Street in Sioux City is a great new venue that we need more of in this part of the world, music and arts. And so I'm really looking forward to being there.
Jerry Wilson, the new book is called Eden to Orizaba. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry I tried to grab it from you at the book festival, but I'm awfully glad I got to read it as my first book of January 2019.
Lori, it's great to be here. And if I could just say, anybody who wants to read more about my books or even order one, I have a website, jerrywilson.us.